Wednesday, June 19th, 2019. You are listening to the Daily Dose Sports Podcast, and I am your host, Clint Daly, coming to you from the Mile High City here in Denver, Colorado, and we are back for another week of talking sports with a dose of common sense. Hey, happy Wednesday to you. Yes, I know, I'm still kind of getting used to this whole once a week thing, but I hope that your week is off to a great start. We are going to do our best to try to help you get through this Wednesday and get to the second half of your week. Hey, a couple of things to keep in mind this week, starting off on Monday. You know, June 17th, back in 1994, was, of course, the day that O.J. Simpson drove all over L.A. in his white Ford Bronco for like an hour and a half during the NBA Finals game because, you know, he was innocent. He was taking one last look for the real killers, so we had that going for us this week. Now, yesterday, June 18th, longtime NFL pass rusher Bruce Smith actually turned 56 years of age. Today is actually Dallas Mavericks longtime star Dirk Nowitzki's birthday. He is turning 41 today. Of course, the NBA draft is going to be taking place tomorrow, and kind of coincidentally, tomorrow is actually the birthday of Darko Milicic, one of the all-time NBA draft busts. Darko is actually going to turn just 34 tomorrow. He's already been out of the league for like 5 years. Finally, do not forget this week, Friday, June 21st, is the first official day of summer. Are you excited about summer? You know, when I was a kid, I used to get excited about summer. I don't know if I'm as excited about summer now. Summer now basically means enduring the heat every single day and just getting angry at the heat. Like, I'd rather have the cool weather, but that's just me. But not only is Friday the first day of summer, it is also the longest day of the year as far as daylight is concerned. Summer solstice is this Friday. And you know, I don't think that it's just a coincidence that the longest day of the year takes place during a time of the year when all we have to watch sports-wise is Major League Baseball. That's basically it. We don't have anything else to watch. In fact, that might be why Friday is going to be such a long day. Forget the sun being at its highest point or whatever. I'm saying the earth just spins a little bit slower this week because baseball is now the only thing on. And wow, did we feel that this weekend? There were some sports things going on, but not a lot of live sports to watch unless you're watching baseball, maybe watching a little bit of US Open. And I think for that reason, that is why the day is going to last a little bit longer this Friday. Hey, it's just science, kids. Hey, if you'd like to contact the show, maybe tell us how you plan to spend the longest day of your year. We would love to hear from you. And, you know, for your sake, I hope you're not just watching baseball or, I don't know, maybe being at the DMV or something, but be sure to reach out to us. Hit us up on email, dailydosports@gmail.com, or go find us over on Facebook or Twitter. Both of those handles are at Daily Dose Sports. Maybe you want to talk about summer solstice. Maybe you're going to let us know some of your summer plans. Maybe you have some feedback for the show, or maybe you have a suggestion for the show. You have an idea that you'd like us to cover this summer, reach out to us. We would love to hear what you have to say. Also, be sure you stop by tpublic.com. Pick up some of that Daily Dose gear you know you need in your life. We do have our Daily Dose iTeam shirts over there. We've got sweatshirts, got hoodies, got t-shirts, and we do have our standard Daily Dose wear over there as well. And you know, when you're picking out t-shirts, hoodies, sweatshirts, you can pick whatever color you want. So make sure that you stop by tpublic.com. Hey, today on the show, we do have something a little bit different for you today. Of course, the biggest stories that we really care about in sports right now are all in the NBA. We have the NBA Finals, which just wrapped up last week. And we might have seen the end of the Golden State Warriors dynasty. Gonna talk a little bit about that today. The Toronto Raptors are now the new champs. Is that something they can sustain? The Los Angeles Lakers, of course, made that blockbuster deal over the weekend. The NBA draft is tomorrow. NBA free agency is coming. So we wanted to talk some NBA today, and we wanted to sit down with someone who knows the game better than most everyone else. Longtime high school basketball coach Russ McKinstry is going to join us when we get back, and we are going to discuss all of the things that are going on in the crazy NBA right now. Hey, we're going to get to Coach Mack right after this.
Just a quick reminder that if you have any shopping to do, maybe you have a birthday coming or an anniversary, or you just want to buy something for yourself. And don't forget that Father's Day is in June. You're going to want to head over to lootcrate.com/dailydose, where you can find all the latest pop culture collectibles that feature your favorite TV shows, movies, and video games. June's Loot Crate theme is now out, and it's called Toy Box. Return to an era where action figures were plentiful, towels doubled as capes, the floor was lava, and Saturday morning cartoons were serious business. Crack open our Toy Box and play around with some awesome pop culture gear. June's Loot Crate theme features items from Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, The Legend of Zelda, and more. But if none of those franchises interest you, remember, you can go to Loot Crate and choose from a huge selection of other crates. You can also order a monthly subscription of crates that will arrive in your mailbox each month. Or you can just order individual items for whatever franchise you want. The best part about ordering from Loot Crate is when you check out, be sure to enter Daily Dose in the coupon box, and we will get you 10% off of your order, just as a thank you for listening to the Daily Dose.
Joining us right now, a great friend of the show, a great friend of mine, a guy that we have been fortunate enough to have on the dose here and there. You know, we talked to him just before the NBA playoffs began. I actually want to play a little bit of what Coach Mack had to say then, because he kind of knows what he's talking about. You know, the best thing about that matchup, though, if we were to see Toronto versus Golden State, I actually think Toronto might be the team that could possibly match up with the Warriors the best of anyone over there.
No, they have the right kind of mindset to play with the Warriors. You're right. You know, they're not afraid to be disciplined with their defensive transition game. They communicate, they locate shooters, and they do all the things the Nuggets don't do. And they do it pretty well. So yeah, I'd like to see that matchup. Actually, I think that'd be kind of interesting.
But right now I want to jump back in with Coach Mack and discuss the NBA season, discuss those NBA finals, and maybe take a look at where things are going. Russ McKinstry has coached high school basketball in Colorado, Kansas, and Arizona. In his career, he has won state titles. He has sent kids on to college. He has sent kids on to the pros. Coach Mack, thanks so much for being with us today. We always enjoy your visits.
It's a pleasure, Coach, and thanks for having me on. And yeah, here we go. Happy summer to you. And the Rockies can't pitch and the Broncos are a mess. So same old, but let's talk some hoops. I'm excited.
Well, as long as we're on bad news, Coach, do you struggle at all with the idea that the championship for our game, this is our game, the NBA title, it's now in the land of like moose and denim. It's up in Canada now.
If I look at it on the surface, it kind of is a blow to the USA pride and home of basketball, you know, where it was invented. But if you really look at it honestly, basketball, I think maybe besides soccer, is the most international sport being played currently. So it's really not a surprise that someone that wins the championship is not based out of the United States, because really the global impact of players coming from all over the world to play the awesome game of basketball, it only makes sense that maybe somebody besides the United States gets an NBA championship.
Well, and that's a good point, because there's so many of these guys from overseas, other countries, they yeah. have watched our game and they have taken some aspects of our game that we kind of forgot about. They've taken things like a big man being able to pass the ball and a big man being able to dribble and step outside and do some things that we kind of lost along the way.
Yeah, no doubt. You know, the three things you do most in basketball, we always talk about it. You dribble, you pass, and you shoot. And the European players are you know, very fundamentally sound in all three of those areas. And as we've seen in the NBA and at the collegiate level, some of them have worked harder at that aspect because, you know, us USA boys and players tend to get, fall madly in love with the dunk, where the European players still understand that, you know, shooting, passing and dribbling, it's going to take you a lot farther than, you know, the ultimate slam dunk. So I think they've just been smarter in their approach to basketball, and it's paying off. And you see now that, you know, 40% of rosters in the NBA are usually made up of international foreign players, and it's really made a difference in the way basketball is being played.
Coach, do you foresee our system over here where we have high school ball and then you go on, you play college ball for a year, a month or whatever it is. Maybe you don't play it at all. Do you see us kind of getting into that club mode going forward? Are we heading towards that European kind of model?
You know, I think from my position as a district athletic director, we talk about this all the time, and there's no doubt that I think all of our high school athletic programs are heavily influenced by the club approach. And the club approach really is the European model where, you know, you don't offer it as your primary existence of athletics at the high school level. It's all done privately through a business model. And I definitely see it trending that direction in our country, where more and more emphasis is being put on the club aspect of the development of athletes than necessarily leaving it up to the high schools to do it like it used to be, you know, 10, 20, 30 years ago, where it was all primarily done by the high schools. Definitely a big change being made there in all sports, not just basketball.
Sure. Coach, we got a lot of things going on in the NBA. I know the NBA draft is going to be tomorrow. Got NBA free agency on the horizon. Want to recap those NBA finals. But, you know, the big news that we had over the weekend was that big trade as the Los Angeles Lakers send Lonzo Ball, Brandon Ingram, Josh Hart, and three first-round picks, including this year's number four overall selection to the New Orleans Pelicans for all NBA forward Anthony Davis. Now, I'm already hearing both sides, and I'm sure you are too. Hey, we hear this is a once-in-a-lifetime deal. Davis makes the Lakers an immediate contender. They might be the best team in the entire league right now. And then you hear the other side. You hear, well, this is a terrible deal. They spent way too much for a guy that has injury problems. LeBron is already going to be 35. He's got a ton of mileage on him. As usual, I think the true answer is somewhere in the middle. But when you saw that trade, you know, what do you think going forward?
Well, I look at it as the story is still unwritten. The chapter has to be finalized by the rest of free agency. If the Lakers can add on with Kemba Walker or, you know, somebody else similar to Kemba, that type of player, then I think it's a great trade for the Lakers. You know, I think we all realize that LeBron is going to be a supplemental type player. He's not going to be the main show as he gets late into his career, but he'll be good enough where he'll have moments. It's kind of like the old Lakers used to play with Worthy and Magic and Byron Scott, and you had Kareem Abdul-Jabbar there, who was kind of in later in his career. But when it came time for the playoff runs, you could count on Kareem Abdul-Jabbar to all of a sudden become the young Kareem Abdul-Jabbar type player. And I think that's what they're trying to do with the Lakers again, is, you know, let LeBron just kind of go through the regular season, do his thing. But when it comes playoff time, I think the old man, you know, combined with Anthony Davis, and if they can get one or two more prime free agents that perform at a high level, then I think they're going to be right there knocking on the door for a world championship.
Well, and I'm glad you brought out that they need to go get someone else, because I'm looking at the situation. And I know in the NBA, does anyone really truly play positions? Probably not. But you do have to have some guards, especially as you get into the postseason. And we see that even this year in the playoffs. If you have guards, you're going to be better than if you don't. And I know LeBron can step out and he can play some guard. You're asking him to do a lot. If you're asking him to bring up the ball every time, be, you know, one of the primary scorers every time, hopefully play some semblance of defense every time. Yeah, they probably do need to go out and get someone else. You know, and I don't know if this is true or not. I'm hearing a rumor that the New Orleans Pelicans can actually keep the Lakers from getting that full salary cap break if they say the deal doesn't go through until whatever the date is, and they're going to hold off a bunch of money that the Lakers would free up otherwise. And I'm hearing that the Pelicans are going to do that. We'll see where that all goes, but doesn't sound good for the Lakers being able to go out there and get one of the huge names. You know, one of the things I kept hearing, you know, Boston is out there. They're trying to get AD as well. We even heard here locally that the Denver Nuggets were kind of going out there and they were kind of fishing and seeing if they could get Davis. But I can't figure out who was really bidding against the Lakers. It seems like the Lakers did give up a lot. This has like huge risk, huge reward written all over. It's either going to be great or it's going to be horrible.
Yeah, you know, and the pieces that the Lakers gave up, a lot of good young talent. It will really be fascinating to watch how Zion and whoever else the Pelicans get, how that all meshes together, both chemistry wise and you're right. I don't think basketball really positions don't really matter anymore, but you do have to have your front door strong guard play and your back door a great post player. And if the Pelicans can somehow, you know, figure out the jigsaw puzzle and put those pieces together, they could be a really, you know, exciting young team, just like the Nuggets.
Yeah.
With a lot of depth and a lot of potential to be extremely good. It's going to be really fascinating to see if New Orleans is the type of city with the type of upper management that can pull this off. And that's kind of where I have my doubts.
Yeah,
I'm a little bit skeptical about that, but it's going to be fascinating to watch and see if they can actually do this.
Coach, where do you come in on Lonzo Ball? Because I look at him and I see some serious potential there. He sees the floor really well. He'll play some defense. He can't shoot a lick. You got to figure that thing out. But I think this kid can play in the NBA. Am I crazy?
You know, initially I wasn't a big fan, but the more I watched him and I saw his development, he grew on me quite a bit. As you know, I look at everything through a coach's eyes and coach's perspective, not so much, you know, like a fan does, but you know, I just wanted to see how he progressed as a player. And I'm like you, I was pretty impressed with what I saw, you know, before he got injured. I thought he was really starting to show signs of probably going to be an above average NBA player. And I never thought that would happen when I watched him play in college. So yeah, I think if his dad does not get in the way,
right,
and just lets the young man develop into who he can be and should be, he could be a pretty special piece to that team down there in New Orleans.
Well, and I wonder, you know, you team him up with a Jrue Holiday. That's going to be one of the better defensive backcourts in the whole league. And I can't believe we're even saying that, but seeing those two play together, you know, if they're both healthy, they're not going to be a contender right off the bat, but they might be very, very interesting. And they're going to have some young pieces eventually coming. Coach, after watching the NBA Finals, of course, the Toronto Raptors win the NBA title in 6 games. But, you know, I keep seeing one thing and I keep hearing one thing specifically after those finals ended, and I'm sure you did too. And I'm getting sick of the constant blame game we have to have after these finals. Steph Curry's terrible. The Warriors' medical staff is terrible. Durant shouldn't have ever been out there. Klay shouldn't have ever been out there. Hey, Kawhi Leonard was hurt too, but of course they say he was courageous. Maybe I'm just becoming like get off my lawn guy, but can't we just watch any of these things with like the tiniest bit of levity and say, hey, you know, Durant's a grown man. He wanted to go out and he wanted to try to win a title. You can't hold that against him.
Oh, it's a sickening aspect about our society now, and it goes way beyond sports, and that we have to judge everybody and we have to have an opinion about everything that goes on. You know, you're right. It's, you know, these are grown men that weren't being held at gunpoint, forced to go play a basketball game. I can guarantee you if they could walk and they had the ability, they were going to go play. And they understand the risk that's involved. And would they do it again? You bet they would do it again, just like all of us would. If you're a competitor and if you weren't that competitive, you wouldn't be in the league. So it's a no-brainer that they'd play. And if they get hurt, then that's just the risk that we all take being an athlete. And we all understand that that's part of the risk and that's part of what we do as an athlete. So, yeah, I mean, and I think if you look at the sources of these people that really criticize or judge, most of them probably never were much of an athlete.
Right.
You know, they're the guys that like to judge and talk about what it is to be an athlete, but they never really experienced what an athlete truly is and how they operate.
Coach, after the Warriors beat the Rockets and we saw them beat the Blazers and they did it so easily without Kevin Durant, we were starting to get those hot takes coming from those same people. Hey, maybe Golden State is actually better without Kevin Durant, which was obviously silly. But they were playing harder. They were getting back to what they had done that had made them so successful. They were starting to get those basket cuts. They were starting to go to the rim, which we weren't seeing much. They were just playing hard. They were playing inspired. They're not better without Kevin Durant, but they were just playing harder.
Yeah, and I definitely saw that too. But I think it led to something else that I think we all saw, just total exhaustion.
Yep.
I think that team was fried and had spent all that they could muster as far as mental and physical toughness and energy and output and intensity, because they've been doing this year after year after year. And I think it just finally caught up with them. And I'll give a lot of credit to Toronto. You know, they did something that I was really intrigued by and fascinated by. And I give a lot of credit to their coach. And half the time I don't even remember the guy's name, but, you know, I saw a lot of junk defenses. I saw combination zones being played. I saw selective trapping being utilized. And you hardly ever see that in the NBA, because NBA players think that is, you know, that's college and high school stuff. And we're above doing that kind of stuff. So to have a coach that could convince his players to go out and play not only very hard at the defensive end, but also to do some intelligent schemes besides just going straight up man really impressed me. And I think that was really the difference in the series.
Coach, I'm glad you brought that up because I was actually going to ask you about that. I was fascinated by the idea that he went out there and he did try to run some junk. Hey, what do we have to lose? We're facing the Golden State Warriors. Let's go out there and try something. We're going to try the boxing one. They're going to try the triangle in two. We're going to try some half zone, half man. I was fascinated by it. But then you started to hear again the talking heads saying, well, why don't they just run boxing one the whole time? And I just had to laugh and I just cracked up and said, you don't get it, because if you can run it in spots and you can have success with it in spots. If you think that's going to be your go-to against a team like the Warriors, I got some really bad news for you. It's not going to go well, is it?
Yeah, and you know, you and me coached together long enough, and we did it at the, you know, 5A level in Colorado high school basketball, and we took the same approach. We would put it on in brief stretches just to take the rhythm, you know, out of the opposing team, and hopefully maybe create some bad shots or a turnover here or there. But if you depended on it for more than just a brief stretch, it was really easy to break it down and get easy shots. So yeah, that's what I was just really impressed that a team at the NBA level kind of got that concept, utilized the concept. And I really think it made a difference in the way they defended Steph Curry and kind of took him out of rhythm and out of his game. And, you know, we're just really intelligent, forcing people who typically don't take shots for the Warriors into taking shots. And, you know, Iguodala stepped up and hit a couple here and there, big shots, but he also missed a ton of shots.
Lot.
Because they said, hey, we're not going to let these two guys beat us, or Clay and Steph beat us. We'll let you beat us. And I just really appreciated that kind of intelligent basketball. It was fun to watch.
I did too. And, you know, it was always funny, and you and I always talked about this, but we saw that in the NBA Finals, there are certain players that find themselves open. And you have to remember, you're open for a reason. And a lot of people kind of forget, hey, I'm open. What do you want me to do, coach? I got to shoot it. No, you're open because they want you to be open. They want you to shoot that shot. It's better than if Curry's taking an open shot.
Yeah, no doubt. And, you know, closer to home, you saw the Trailblazers do that to the Nuggets. And, you know, Will Barton and Gary Harris, who are streaky shooters, you know, when they're forced to think about shots because they are so wide open, sometimes that's when they're at their worst. And it proved to be true in the series with the Trailblazers, and that, you know, they really dictated who they wanted to take shots and really made other people struggle to get their shots. And, it, you know, and you saw it in this series with the Raptors and the Warriors as well. And, you know, guys can hit shots occasionally and hit big shots, but there's a reason you're a superstar and there's a reason you're a role player. And that's not going to change just because all of a sudden you're getting more freedom at the offensive end. Like you said, there's a reason you're getting that freedom. It's because they know that you're not a consistent, you know, shooter that's going to step up, and especially under pressure of a NBA championship situation, knockdown shot. So, yeah, I was just really impressed. Toronto, you know, had guys that were playing hard defensively, Van Sleet, you know, Lowry, you know, just really besides the fact that they were playing intelligent basketball, were playing extremely hard at the defensive end. And, you know, I just really, because my knock always has been on the NBA is that, you know, people really don't buy into the defensive end. And it's, you know, it's a game where you just have to knock down shots because you're going to get wide open shots. But the Raptors really, you know, made a concerted, strong effort to make shots difficult. And what we've always said, and you know this as a coach too, is that you have to make people miss shots. They're not going to miss shots on their own typically. And Toronto made guys from the Warriors miss shots, which I was impressed with too.
Coach, we kind of forgot how good Kawhi Leonard was, didn't we?
Yeah.
I mean, he was out of the game. He was out with that injury for so long. And you watch him at stretches, and I know he's already getting, you know, Jordan comparisons, whatever, and I don't care about any of that. But I just look at that guy and say, wow, when he wants to take over, he can actually come in and completely just turn a game and make play after play after play at both ends of the floor. Kawhi Leonard is really, really special.
Yeah, and I'm guilty as charged because I was one of those guys. I always thought Kawhi was really a solid, above-average player, but I really didn't view him as a superstar, mega star, you know, take over a game type of guy. He's not Michael Jordan, but he's pretty damn good.
Yeah, he is.
And I really grew to respect him during this season with, you know, that he was with Toronto as someone that is a lot more special than I ever gave him credit. And it'll be interesting. I think he's probably going to stay at Toronto. I really do. You know, it'll be interesting to see where he eventually ends up if it is Toronto.
You know, the one thing that stands out about Kawhi that I really saw in this series, and one thing that we always harped on as coaches, and if you have a young player in your house, you better harp on it as well. You can tell Kawhi Leonard has put in some serious work in that weight room because he is the strongest guy on the floor. You see other guys bump into him and go down, and he's standing there like, what just happened? He is the strongest guy on the floor almost every single night.
Most definitely. And you know, I think that's where you can compare him to Jordan, because Jordan was the same way. And most people never talk about Jordan's strength. They talk about his vertical and his ability to play under pressure. But, you know, Michael Jordan, just like Kawhi, I think those guys in their core, you know, from the kneecaps up through the sternum, you know, the stomach, the butt, the thighs, those guys are just super, super strong through their core. And that gives them an ability to do some things athletically that the rest of the human world can't even imagine doing. So, yeah, it's really impressive that he has put the time into becoming that type of athlete.
You know, when we watch Kawhi and we see the success he had in Toronto, is there like a little twinge of like, man, something about this bothers me? Because I know he basically threw that tantrum down in San Antonio. Like, some of that kind of rubbed me the wrong way. And we know, hey, you might not always get along with Popovich, but man, San Antonio seems like they're always doing things right. There was a little bit of me, I'm not saying all of me, there was a little bit of me that was kind of like, I don't know if I want him to have as much success as he ended up having after bailing on San Antonio like that, but maybe that's just me, you know, ex-coach.
No, I feel the same way. You know, I love Popovich. You know, he's the best coach in the NBA, and he's kind of like, you know, the Patriots and Belichick and all them. It's just, you know, they really, both those guys understand how to set a culture for an organization and get guys to play above, you know, what their expected potential to be. And when you can do that at that level with the egos that you have to deal with, there's something very, very unique and special about you as a coach. And so for Kawhi not to embrace that and want to be a part of it and leave that organization has always bothered me. And that's kind of why maybe I deflected my opinion of him as a player, is because he left such a great coach and organization. But you got to give the dude credit. He's the real deal. He's something special.
Yeah, he is. Coach, you know, we talk about this all the time. You have your studs, you know, you have your Kawhi Leonards, but it is always about the role players. If you truly want to make that championship kind of march, the Raptors got huge production. You mentioned it earlier, Pascal Siakam, Marc Gasol, Serge Ibaka. They just seemed to get better as the series went on. It was like they got stronger and they were just wearing out the Warriors. Some of those guys that, you know, we're going to kind of forget those names, you know, the Van Fleets and those kind of guys, they really stepped up and just played huge in some of the biggest games.
Well, you know, and that, you know, again, going back to something locally, they did what I was hoping the Nugget bench would do. And then you watched how they performed and produced, and you really realize how far away the Nuggets are. And maybe the Nuggets just need more playoff experience, but the way those guys performed was really amazing to me. And again, you really hope that the Nuggets and their young core of studs that give them so much depth would have stepped up and performed the same way, but they didn't.
No.
And I guess maybe it is. It's just a great group of guys that have been there, done it, and understood exactly what needed to take place in order for them to win games. And I only hope that the Nuggets, through their experience, gain some wisdom. And you just kind of hope that these guys also watch the Raptors play and watch what those guys were able to do. And they learn from just, you know, being observers of what it really looks like to be a professional who understands the sacrifices and the nuances of what it takes to be a world champion.
You know, there's one guy on that Raptors team, and you mentioned him before, but he's a guy that I think we actually have to talk a little bit about. Kyle Lowry, I know we kind of get stuck on his shooting, and you look at his shooting, and sometimes he's hitting, sometimes he's not. He's a very streaky shooter. But he does so much more than just shooting. Yes, he probably fouls too much, but he goes in, he makes some scrappy plays. He comes up with loose balls. He takes a charge. Kyle Lowry is a guy that I started to respect a little more the more I watched him in this series, because I was like, really? He does all this? He's a little bitty guy. He's a lot tougher than I thought he was, though.
Yeah, you know, it's just a long line of guys that have that unique, special quality about them, you know, that end up on championship teams. And they really are the reason that teams do win championships. You know, you think back to, you know, the Havlicek's, the Vinnie Johnson's, the Kenny Smith's, just those guys that are kind of guys, just regular guys in the NBA. But then all of a sudden, when it gets time for a championship series, they totally elevate their game and their contributions at both ends of the court, you know, offensively, defensively, is really what puts a team over the hump to go on and win a championship. And you're right. You tend to forget about those guys because we always focus, obviously, on the, you know, the guys that get the big contracts and the megastars. But those are the kind of guys that no matter what level, college, high school, middle school, NBA, World Cup basketball, whatever you're looking at, those are the guys that figure out a way to help teams just become extra special and take that next leap.
You know, you mentioned how tough Toronto was defensively. You mentioned how they kind of just wore out the Warriors, and they absolutely did. One thing I think really gets lost in what Toronto did, and it's something that we've talked about, but it's something that gets lost so much in basketball, just in general. I don't care what level you're at, whether it's little kids, whether it's high school, whether it's NBA, they pass and catch the ball so well. You didn't see very many unforced turnovers from Toronto. It was not very often. Every once in a while, they'd have one or they'd have a bad one. We think of the bad one at the end of game 6 by Danny Green, but for the most part, they pass the ball so effectively. Now, I have a theory, and my theory is in video games, you don't have to be an accurate passer. You just push X and it passes the ball for you. We know in the real world, that's not how it works. Kids don't learn to pass and catch, and they have to. You saw how much success Toronto had when they were so good at it this year.
No, and that's such a great observation on your part, because really, and you watch playoff basketball, and I watch it, you know, sometimes I'm just a casual observer of NBA playoffs, but this year, with the Nuggets finally being a factor, you know, I really got into it and watched it really closely. And you're right. It's, you know, there's so many teams that don't play the game of basketball with two hands. They try and play everything with one hand, and they don't have very good hand strength. And I would say the Nuggets fit into that category, where there's just so many times where, due to one-handed passes or the fact that their hands aren't very strong, you know, it leads to maybe an additional 3 to 5 turnovers a game. And when the margin is so slim for wins and losses at that level, you know, sometimes you can attribute losses just to guys that have bad hands. For example, Paul Millsap, for a guy that's so strong and physical, his hands are horrible. You know, he's always fumbling a pass or there's a ball being stripped out of his hands. He's also very good at that, the defensive end of creating those things. But unfortunately, at the offensive end, he has a tendency to give up those type of turnovers. And I think you're right. I think the Toronto Raptors just, they do. They have strong hands. They value the whole possession by possession, making sure that, you know, every time we're at the offensive end, we need to get a shot. And it's not okay to throw a one-hand lazy pass a la Joker, you know, Jokic,
right,
who has a tendency to do that. And just, you know, I hate to use the Vic Fangio death by inches, but it really does apply to the game of basketball, probably more than football. Is every possession is so critical. And if you get lackadaisical or you don't take it, extremely focused possession by possession, it can cost you a game. It can cost you a series.
Yeah, it can. And we saw Toronto just have so much success. Series after series, they just took care of the ball a little bit better than other teams do. And it always comes down to, you know, a few possessions, but maybe you took care of it just a little bit better than they did at the beginning of the third quarter, and it ends up paying off for you at the end of the fourth, which is when it all matters. Coach, you know, congrats to the Toronto Raptors. Congrats to their fans and their players and everybody. But one person that I can't say congrats to, did you ever have anybody like Drake being that obnoxious on the sideline, coming over and rubbing your shoulders during timeouts? Did you ever have a fan that was that bad on your sideline?
Oh, isn't it just embarrassing when someone who has no business being part of the game tries to take over being the show on top of the show? Yeah, shame on Drake. I mean, for a guy that probably is worth upwards of, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars,
right,
trying to take over the limelight from a bunch of guys who are, you know, trying to perform out there on the court. Yeah, it was, you know, totally embarrassing. He reminded me of a guy
Spike
with
Lee?
Glasses. Yeah, Spike Lee.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, Spike Lee, Drake, you know, they're one and the same. That bothers me. And I noticed, I think that the TV did a pretty good job of trying to freeze them out and not showing him. But initially he got a lot of airtime and it was just driving me crazy to the point where I thought, if this continues, I'm not going to watch this game anymore because I don't want to see Drake out there, you know, beating his chest and being the show.
Well, it was so bad that you saw Warriors players going directly at him, talking trash to him.
Yeah.
I mean, this isn't even a guy anywhere near the court as far as, you know, playing wise, but they're looking at him after they score. I was just going, oh my goodness, dude, I'm embarrassed for you because you don't have the sense to be embarrassed for yourself. Oh, that was
and even worse, Coach, was the fact that they had some video of him trying to shoot a basketball and the kid doesn't have a clue or
no.
Doesn't have an athletic bone in his body and totally embarrassed himself by trying to shoot a basketball. So, you know, he never played the game, which makes it doubly as bad. He's out there trying to be the show. So, yeah, that was a bad look for Toronto.
It was, and it was a bad look for the NBA. I was kind of hoping the NBA might, but like you said, I do think they said, hey, TV crews, stop showing that clown. Nobody else needs to see that. He's a moron. That was rough.
Thank goodness they did that, yes.
I know, I was glad they did. Coach, what do the Warriors do now? I mean, Klay and Durant are probably on the shelf for a full year. Andre Iguodala is probably going to be done by the time they do get back. What do the Warriors do going forward now? Do they go re-sign both of them? I'm assuming they do, don't they?
What a great question, and what a dilemma they are in. And I'm hoping that teams like the Lakers, the Nuggets, Pelicans, whoever, Jazz, Trailblazers, I hope they're all smart to say, oh my gosh, the window has been cracked open, and
yes,
we better go for it. You know, that's what you would hope, that they're smart enough to figure it out that, you know, you're right. All of a sudden, what was assumed to be another run of maybe 2, 3, 4 years, it's not that way anymore. And who knows what type of, you know, they're both going to come back and be very good players. But, you know, Durant, Achilles, Klay, who is the ultimate warrior, you know, they're going to work their rear ends off. But you're right, they're not going to play next year.
No.
And then other things are going to change within that organization. Like you said, other players are going to come and go. And, you know, Boogie Cousins looks like, you know, his career is even in jeopardy. He just doesn't look right.
Oh, geez. He's so fat.
Yeah.
He can't
he's
move
just,
at all.
You know, his timing's off. He's out of shape. He's a mess right now. So, yeah, I don't know what they're going to do. And I think you're right. I think that what that did is, it's going to force them to resign, or not force them, but they'll want to resign both of them and, you know, do the best they can for a year and then hope that they come back healthy and better than before. But, you know, we know how that goes.
Yeah, that's tough.
That's 50-50 at best.
Yes, it is. You know, the one thing I was thinking about, though, and maybe because I'm a Nuggets fan and, you know, like you, and we're looking at the Nuggets, what are they going to do next year? Couldn't you just totally see the Warriors limping into the playoffs next year with Steph, and like Iguodala and Draymond, and maybe Klay gets back in time for the playoffs as like a 7 or an 8 seed, and the Nuggets pull them and we just go, oh no, we're getting knocked out again by them.
I'm going to pretend you didn't even say that.
You know it's
you're
coming.
Right. That's exactly what's going to happen. We'll be the 2 seed and we'll draw them and Klay will come back and
just bury
and here
us.
We go again. Yep.
You know, I know that there were a lot of rumors as soon as the season ended that the Houston Rockets tearing it completely down, starting completely over. Hey, when I see, you know, what you just talked about, the window's a little bit cracked. If I'm Houston, I don't know, I'm a little more patient. If I'm anyone in the West, I'm a little more patient because I look around and say, hey, there's a crack right there. We might be able to slip in and do something. If I'm the Houston Rockets, I'd hold on for a little while longer. You might be the best team in the West.
Yeah, and, you know, unfortunately, from what I've been hearing is that they're imploding from within and
yep.
that... You know, Chris Paul and James Harden can't stand being in the same arena with each other, and that one of them's going to have to go. And so, yeah, you know, and D'Antoni, you know, is caught in the middle of it with his contract extension and all the politics that go with that. So you would think that calmer heads would prevail and they sort through their differences, because you're right. They probably are the best team. In fact, I said the Nuggets would be 2. it's exactly what I was thinking, is that Houston would be number one seed. But, you know, if Chris Paul and James can't figure out how to mend fences and coexist, then this really might be the time, especially if, you know, you have the Porter kid come back for the Nuggets and he can play a little bit and then maybe add one more piece beyond him. Who knows? You know, it's hard to fantasize that the Nuggets could ever make a legit run, but this might be their opportunity. You never know.
Well, it might be. And Coach, looking forward to next year. I mean, who are the big dogs now? Because the Giant might be down and might be down for a while. I don't know. I'm looking at a few other teams out there. I'm looking. We'll see what Houston does. We'll see if they can figure out and try to figure out their, like you said, implosion there. Denver is right there. I really liked what I saw out of Portland. And again, goes back to, you know, really good guard play. Sometimes I think those little guards end up wearing down in you know, the series. But who are the big dogs going to be next year?
Well, yeah, I think, you know, I think it's going to be kind of up for grabs depending on the approach the teams decide to take. And again, if the Nuggets, their big gamble of drafting Porter pays off and the kid can actually come through as advertised, then holy cow, all of a sudden they're right there. Because he's exactly what they need, another big inside presence that can kind of go in and out and rebound a little bit and defend and be a rim protector. He'd be just what the doctor ordered. But you got Nurkic coming back for Portland if he's healthy, which I'm sure he will be. And if they added one more piece, or, you know, if the Rockets can figure it out. And I think, you know, that mid-level acquisition through free agency in the West is going to be really critical this summer. You know, who can get a Chris Middleton or, you know, somebody similar to Chris Middleton to jump into a Western Conference team? Because there's, you know, there's even the Jazz. I mean, if they added a piece or two, could all of a sudden become really, really good and maybe the team to beat. So I think it's going to be really fascinating. It goes through the draft and the trades and free agency over the next, you know, 6 weeks to really see where teams end up. Because obviously, they're smarter than we are. If we see it, they've got to see it. Like, hey, here's our opportunity. We've got to go for it right now. We'll see who has that mentality and gets it done.
Right, because you look at a team like the Clippers, who everyone's going to kind of forget about now with this deal with Anthony Davis, and you say, hey, the Clippers have a ton of money. They've got a good young, you know, cast there. They've got a good coach. They've got, obviously, you know, brains up front with Jerry West in there. They could be right on the edge. You look at someone like San Antonio, and I know, you know, they get bounced by Denver in that game 7, but San Antonio has some pieces. We know Popovich can coach. Could they go get kind of that, you know, mid-level guy that would bring in just a complete different look to what they had, where they couldn't sometimes score down the stretch? Maybe they bring it in, I don't know, Tobias Harris, or they get someone like that.
Right.
And you say, hey, San Antonio's back. They're right there. And then you look over in the East, and we talked about it, you know, prior to the playoffs. Hey, the East is pretty darn good this year.
Yep. Yeah, no doubt. And, you know, you talk about the Clippers, I always forget about them. And, you know, that's Kawhi's old stomping ground. So, they have all the money to offer him. So, you know, it wouldn't be a total shocker if they somehow manipulated the system and got Kawhi maybe to leave Toronto. But, it's going to be really fascinating to see the moves teams make. And, you know, LeBron kind of got the ball rolling by, you know, getting the Lakers to get AD, and I'm sure that's just the beginning of what he's trying to accomplish. And, you know, who really will be influential and be able to, you know, pull in some guys that would say, hey, if I end up in this particular city, we could make a run at this. So, and that's where you kind of worry about the Nuggets because of their reputation as a flyover city in the, you know, in the Forgotten Mountain Standard Time Zone, you know. So, but we'll see. Who knows?
Coach, we have the NBA draft coming tomorrow, and we know who is coming out first. I mean, we know it's going to be Zion. We know it's going to be Ja Morant. We know the big names are right at the top of the board, maybe a couple of those other kids from Duke. Is there anyone else coming out in the draft that you just look at and say, hey, I know he's not being talked about in that same breath, but man, because I look at those two kids from Gonzaga. I look at, was it Hashimura and then the Clark kid, and I'm going, I don't know. What I saw from the kid up at Portland this year, he was another Gonzaga kid. I don't know. I might be real interested in them. Obviously, DeAndre Hunter out of Virginia. There's steals in the draft every single year if you're smart enough to dig and you can find the right person. Anyone in the draft you really like?
You know, that's such a intriguing question, because what I have kind of figured out through the years, and I'm getting to be an old man now, is that some of these guys that run NBA basketball organizations, they can take a kid who's 20 years old and they can foresee him at 24, 25 and how much that kid can change in those 4 or 5 years. And that, I think, is the key of that whole NBA process is gauging a kid who's probably going to be drafted at 19 or 20, but you can project him and what he's actually going to be like at 24, 25. And if you're really, really good at that process and being able to project what kids will be, not what they are currently, those are the guys that end up getting the real steals in the draft. So that's where it's sometimes hard for me to predict because I don't study it in that type of, intense focus like these NBA organizations do. And, you know, you see it all the time, even the kids that I've coached that, you know, go off to college as a 19, 18, 19 year old freshman. But when they turn 23, 24, they've grown 3 inches. They've put on 35 pounds of muscle. They've matured, you know, mentally. They're emotionally intelligent where they weren't before. And so just that change concept is so important in the draft, you know, and then you throw in all these players coming from Europe or even South America or Africa. It's just, I would love to be a fly on the wall in some of these war rooms where they're projecting draft picks and they're discussing who they want to take, because that's got to be a big part of the equation of what they're looking at.
Well, and I'm glad that you brought that up, because when you're talking about that and you're projecting, what are they going to be? We know what they were at the college level, but what are they going to be? Hey, I still struggle a little bit, and I'm not saying he's gonna struggle, but I still struggle a little. I don't know what Zion Williamson is going to be. I really don't. I don't know if anyone right. does. He can't possibly dominate like he did at the college level, right? I don't think he can, but he's going to be really, really good.
Right. Yeah. It, that upside, that next level, where can he take his game? You know, and it obviously would have to be perimeter shooting. You know, obviously it'd have to be, some of the dirty work stuff, rebounding, loose balls where, you know, you can always improve, get better, maybe athletically get, you know, lose a little bit of baby fat, become a little bit more explosive. But you're right. He is so freaking good right now.
Yep.
Yeah. How much better can you get? Where you look at someone like Ja Morant, who really you can tell has a lot of, manliness left to develop, just natural, you know, progression of getting older. Maybe he'll be the real deal. You know, maybe he'll be better than Zion. So yeah, you just really never know, you know, and some guys really do reach their potential when they're 19 and some guys actually reach their potential when they're 26 or 27. So that's the mystery of that whole process.
Yeah, it is. And I could easily see another one of those Duke kids, a Cam Reddish or someone that everyone's just kind of sleeping on, all of a sudden stepping in. Where'd he come from? Wow, he wasn't even that good with Duke, but now he's kind of figured some things out. He's grown. He's added some weight. He's gotten a little bit smarter. And all of a sudden he just explodes and we're going, wow, where'd this kid come from? Well, he's there the whole time. We just can't, you know, like you said, you can't really project it. It's always difficult to do. It's going to be really, really interesting to watch this NBA offseason. I'm not usually a big NBA offseason guy. You know, you kind of keep an eye on it. But this offseason is just going to be nuts. There's so many free agents. There's so many, draft possibilities, trade possibilities, free agent possibilities. It's going to be a wild NBA offseason, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think what's encouraging to me, maybe why I'm a little bit more invested than I typically am, is I think the whole mantra of the super teams, and we got to form a super team to compete. I think there's enough organizations that have built, internally through a process where now the mantra of having to have 3 superstars on a team to get an NBA title, I think Toronto helped dispel that as the process that you have to go through to win a championship, which I think is so valuable for the NBA. And I think the NBA and interest in the NBA is just going to be at an all-time high because, me as a casual observer or former coach, whatever you want to call me, If you're going to tell me that, you know, we're going to get a team and they're going to go out and get the 5 or 6 best players in the NBA and they're all going to play for one team, I have absolutely zero interest in that model of basketball. But if you're telling me that every team is going to try and build from within or, you know, make this move or that move to try and, get the right combination of chemistry and skill and coachability and character and all those things. Now I become very intrigued by that process. So I think we're seeing more of that now, and that's why I'm kind of excited to see what happens.
Yeah, I am too. And you know, when you bring that up, one team that just kind of sticks in the back of my mind, and I'm not a fan by any stretch of the imagination, but one team, when you say that, kind of build from within, just kind of keep the pieces we have. I look at those Boston Celtics and I say, they just might sneak up on everyone. They get rid of Kyrie. He goes somewhere else. And now maybe Boston gets back to what they were doing, and they were pretty darn good. Maybe they're actually going to be a little bit sneakier than we kind of forget. You know, we kind of forget about them with the way they ended this year with Kyrie and that whole mess. But I don't know. Boston might be a sneaky team out there.
No doubt. And, you know, I know both of us have mutual utmost respect for their coach, Brad Stevens.
Yeah, for sure.
And Kyrie, you know, heck of a player, but probably not the first guy you want to tap in if you're trying to build a team first culture, and it kind of backfired on Boston. But yeah, I think they're going to be making some big steps forward by subtracting Kyrie from that roster. And yeah, I mean, they'll be similar to Nuggets, Trailblazers, Utah Jazz, where there's just a lot of good, solid, you know, young basketball players that play really hard for their coach and could make a dramatic improvement in the playoffs next year.
Coach, we have enjoyed talking about the NBA, but I'm gonna do something, and I'm gonna regret it. But we gotta talk a little bit NFL, and I'm not gonna do it a lot, but we gotta talk a little bit of NFL. And you know, I would be remiss, and I do have to bring this up because we kind of missed this last week on the Dose with us going to a weekly show now, but we kind of missed the whole passing of Denver Broncos owner Pat Bowlen. Hey, Pat Bowlen was really good. He averaged 10 plus wins for his tenure as owner, second most Super Bowl appearances ever, 21 winning seasons, fourth best winning percentage in all of North American sports. Not the NFL, all North American sports. Pat Bowlen right there. I think he kind of gets overlooked by most people. Pat Bowlen was phenomenal as an owner. It's tough to see him go, though.
Yeah, I agree. It was really a sad week for the state and the region. And the saddest thing to me is that, you know, with him getting inducted into the Hall of Fame, that he didn't get the opportunity to experience that and see how much everybody appreciated his efforts, admired what he accomplished. And I just feel so bad for him and his family, because he is, like you said, he's very underappreciated throughout the rest of the NFL. I think people in this part of the country really respect and just love the man for what he brought to Denver and the Rocky Mountain region. Unbelievable leader of men, and set a tone in that organization that, you know, made us the envy of the NFL. You know, we're at the level of the Pittsburgh Steelers, and who would have ever thought that the Denver Broncos would be mentioned as an organization, as someone that is at the level of the Pittsburgh Steelers, but we are, you know, the Dallas Cowboys, but we are. And that's really due to Pat Bowlen and what he brought to Denver and the Denver Broncos.
Well, and not only did he bring that to Denver, because prior to him being in Denver, and a lot of people don't know, prior to him being in Denver, we were such that middling, never going to be the true contender kind of team. He changed that. He made it a first-class organization. But it wasn't just about the Denver Broncos. He was so instrumental in getting those huge TV contracts. That is such a big part of what we even see today in the league. It wasn't just a Denver thing. Pat Bowlen helped the NFL a lot more than I think a lot of people realize. You know, just it's a loss for the entire league. Obviously, it's a loss for us here in Denver. But coach, the hard part, even more so, is the fact that when we look at where these Broncos are at now, and you kind of look at the ownership situation, and you have to kind of wonder, these two things do coincide, don't they?
Yeah, no doubt. I think you know, when he unfortunately was dealt the horrible blow of Alzheimer's, it was a blow to the entire organization and its ability to function at the level it needed to function. So, again, I think it just is a testimony to how strong he was as a leader. And all of a sudden, without his leadership being usable because of his illness, we found out that, you know, decision-making and the tough decisions that have to be made by someone in control probably were not being handled appropriately. And that's not to blame anybody. It's just the fact that that's how good of an owner he was, is he was making the tough calls whether saying yes, no, or maybe, or whatever he needed to say to make things happen, to make this whole thing come together. When you don't have that person available to make those decisions, well, you end up in chaos. And we have been in a state of chaos for 3 years now.
You know, when we think back to Pat Bowlen, we think of, you know, some of the things he did, and you think of, you know, obviously the Super Bowls, you think of him going down to the sideline, maybe at the end, toward the end of the game or whatever. One of the things that I will always remember about Pat Bowlen, and, you know, not to make this all about Pat Bowlen or whatever, but I will always remember one of the most difficult things that he probably ever had to do. He had to fire Mike Shanahan, but he had to do it for the good of the franchise. And I know that couldn't have been an easy thing, but he did it. And it paid off because Mike Shanahan had gone, well, kind of where John Elway has gone right now. He's kind of gone off the deep end, and he was doing things that were absolutely insane. Pat Bowlen stepped up and he did the right thing, and it paid off in the long run.
Yeah. You know, how difficult can it be to, you know, take someone that won two Super Bowls and is probably, if not your closest friend, you know, one of your closest friends,
sure,
and tell him, you know, here's the door. Sorry, buddy. But, we are desperately in need of a change, and thank you, but we need to make this change. Yeah, I mean, that tells you, you know, the character of a man, the priorities that he set, and you know, the fact that you know, I will fire my best friend if it means this is going to be better for all of us. And that's such a difficult thing to do, and most people won't do it. You know, they'll just suffer through the consequences. And like most people, and I was probably one of them, Coach, I probably thought that Shanny could coach as long as he wanted to.
Right.
And I was getting frustrated with the 8-8 seasons and the blowouts in the first round of the playoffs and, you know, some of the embarrassing things that were happening. But I just figured, hey, you know, he won two Super Bowls. It'll be up to him to make that call. So, yeah, just more kudos to the strength of the character of Mr. Bowlen, and the fact that here's a guy that is extremely humble and, you know, very low key and wanted to be behind the scenes most of the time, but stepping up and making one of the most difficult decisions that you could possibly have to make and doing what's right by the organization.
Well, Coach, it's probably going to be a really long NFL season for us this year, because we're going to have to watch this mess and then try to figure this out. And I don't think it's, you know, going to get better anytime soon. The only thing that gives me hope, I do think maybe Vic Fangio is the right guy. I think he's a smart coach. I think he kind of gets it, but I don't think they have the people in place. I don't think they have the personnel to really go out and truly compete. It's going to be a tough year, but at least we have the Oakland Raiders on Hard Knocks, so that'll help us feel a little bit better about the mess that we're in, right?
There'll be some good comedy relief, and yeah, it'll be a fascinating watch to see all the you know, characters, the knuckleheads that have assembled in Oakland, California. And now they have the camera on them. It'll be just fascinating to see what kind of trouble they get themselves into.
There are some wild, wild characters in that locker room. I don't know how it's going to turn out, but it's going to be highly entertaining. Coach, we're going to have you back at some point this summer. We're going to have you back when we get close to the NFL. We always enjoy getting your input. You have just a common sense look at what is going on in the world of sports. And that is what we love the most here at The Dose. We don't like the hot takes. We don't like the nonsense. But every single time you come on, I hear back from listeners that enjoy when you come on. We always appreciate you coming on The Dose. We just love it when you stop by.
Hey, I love talking. And any chance I get to talk sports with you and talk about the world of sports and especially the local sports scene, you know how much I enjoy it. So thank you for having me.
You are welcome anytime. Thanks so much, Coach.
Take care.
Hey, next week on The Dose, we will be recapping that NBA draft that does start tomorrow, and we're going to start to take a little bit of a look forward to NBA free agency. Now we're starting to see some moves being made. We're going to have a little bit better idea of who's going to need what after that draft. We'll have to talk a little bit about that, and of course, we will be bringing you the latest sports news as only we can. And you know, we just might have to have a Daily Dose Top 5 for you next week as well. Hey, I have to say thank you so much to Russ McKinstry for stopping by The Dose. We do always enjoy your visit. Thank you so much to each and every one of you for listening to the show. Thank you for sharing the show. Thank you for the emails, the texts, and the tweets. We do appreciate it. Hey, I have to say thank you to JSP. Could not do any of this without you. Have a great Wednesday and a great remaining week. I will see you all next Wednesday.